The Inner Voice Show is a dialogue between the host and the listeners about their relationships. This show is not an attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat any mental health or illness condition. Please consult your physician, psychiatrist, or psychotherapist for personal matters.
Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. Now, this is the show about what matters most in life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest study regarding the psychological reasons men and women experience happiness differently. And then I'll talk to Dr. James Craigton, the author of The Loving Through Your Differences. And you can call us on the studio line, 951-922-3532, to speak to me or to speak to Dr. Craigton or about your love life. We're talking about the loving through your differences. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with the tip of the week. Bye-bye.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, the awareness path to create the life you want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So this is the tip of the week. Now, there is an amazing sense of peace when you intend to be in peace with all that happens around you. Now, the intention of peace is what sets the stage for inner peace and possibly creating a peaceful relationship and environment around us. Now, being honest with yourself, being on integrity, authentic, transparent, loving, and caring for yourself and everyone sets the stage for peace. The need to be right, to overpower, dominate, and control others creates a fight and resistance, and therefore takes your peace away. Events will happen that would make you want to resist what is about to change in your life, that would take your peace away. Now, having the ability to receive what comes at you with peace is a skill to be learned and practiced. Don't take things personally. Allow yourself to see what is in front of you, even if you don't like it or feel threatened by it. Then make a decision on how to handle it based on what you intend to create in your life. Be authentic to your emotions, identify them, honor them, and release them and integrate them with your rational decision-making to have a clear and peaceful action toward an outcome that you desire. We'll be right back with research about who's happier, men or women. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and this is the latest research. Now, who's happier, men or women? An article published in Inverse says that research shows it's a complicated question, of course, and that asking whether males or females are happier isn't really that helpful because essentially happiness is different for women than men. Now, women's happiness has been declining for the past 30 years. According to recent statistics, and research shows that women are twice as likely to experience depression compared with men. Gender differences in depression are well established, and studies have found that biological, psychological, and social factors contribute to the disparity. But research also shows that women are more likely to experience intense positive emotions, yay, such as joy and happiness, compared to men. So it seems that women's more intense positive emotions balance out their higher risk of depression. Research also shows women are more likely to try and get help and access treatment, allowing them to also recover sooner. Early studies on gender and happiness found men and women are socialized to express different emotions. For example, women are more likely to express happiness, warmth, and fear, which helps with social bonding and appears more consistent with the traditional role as primary caregiver, whereas men display more anger, pride, and contempt, which are more consistent with the protector and provider role. Recent brain research suggests that these differences are not social, but also in the brain. In numerous studies, females score higher than males in standard tests of emotion recognition, social sensitivity, and empathy. Neuroimaging studies have investigated that these findings further and discovered that females utilize more area of the brain containing mirror neurons than males when they process emotions. Now, mirror neurons allow us to experience the world from other people's perspective to understand their actions and intentions. This may explain why women can experience deeper kind of sadness. Psychologically, it seems men and women differ in the way they process and express emotions. With the exception of anger, women experience emotions more intensely and share their emotions more openly with others. Studies have found in particular that women express more pro-social emotions, such as gratitude, which has been linked to greater happiness. This supports the theory that women's happiness is more dependent on relationships than men. However, within these studies lies a significant blind spot, which is that women often do feel anger as intensely as men, but do not express it openly, as it is not viewed as socially acceptable. When men feel angry, they're more likely to vocalize it and direct it at others, whereas women are more likely to internalize and direct the anger at themselves, and women ruminate rather than speak out. And this is where women's vulnerability to stress and depression lies. Studies show that when men have greater problem-solving abilities and cognitive flexibility, which can contribute to a greater resilience and positive mood, women's reactivity to stress makes it harder for them to challenge their thinking at times, and this can exacerbate symptoms of low mood. This type of inequality of happiness means that it is harder for women to maintain a happy state when faced with social expectations and constraints. Research into stress shows that women are more physically reactive to social rejection compared with men, for example. Now, this means they are more likely to prioritize the needs of others over their own, and over time, this can also lead to resentment and feeling unfulfilled. Females in general prioritize doing the right thing over being happy, whereas men are better at the pursuit of pleasure and hedonism. Studies have also found that women tend to act more ethically than men and are more likely to suffer feelings of shame if they're not seen to be doing the right thing. But female morality also leads them to engage in more fulfilling and impactful work. And this ultimately brings them greater joy, peace, and contentment. Now, as you can see, it's a complicated picture. Yes, women are more sensitive to stress and more vulnerable to depression and trauma, but they're also incredibly resilient and significantly more capable of post-traumatic growth compared with men. So they are resilient and they jump back into life much faster. Studies show that this is due to their sociability and the ability to connect at a deeper level with others, both male and female. Also, it is important to recognize that despite these differences, the benefits of happiness are far-reaching for both women and men, and that research shows happiness is not merely a function of individual experience, but ripples through social networks. Happiness is infectious and contagious, and it has a positive impact on the health and well-being of everyone. So now you know, between men and women, there are differences psychologically, physically, in the brain, and how the society actually accepts their expression of emotions. And that's why we get trained that way. But ultimately, being true to yourself and learning what to do with your emotions, how to handle it, identify it, release it, and give it the appropriate expression that it needs, ultimately you would lead yourself to happiness in that way. So I'm so glad that we will be right back with our guest. Dr. James Craigton, who's a psychologist and a relationship consultant who has worked with couples and conducted communications training for more than 50 years. He's the author of Loving Through Your Differences, Building Strong Relationships from Separate Realities. Dr. Craigton recently developed and conducted couples conflict training for several hundreds professional staff of the Thailand Department of Mental Health based on the new Thai translation of his last book, How Loving Couples Fight. And he has taught throughout North America, as well as Korea, Japan, Israel, Brazil, Egypt, Russia, and the Republic of Georgia. And we'll be right back with Dr. James Craigton.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fuzhan.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fuzhan. Dr. Fuzhan is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fuzhan. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fuzhan Zain, and I'm so excited to have Dr. James Creighton with me, the author of Loving Through Your Differences. Welcome, Dr. Creighton.
Thanks, Dr. Zain. Great to be with you.
Now, I went through your book. It is an awesome book. It talks about what is real. Really, what is real? Like that's the best thing that I was, as I was living, I'm like, this is a fresh breath of air. Like, yeah. So I'm really excited to bring that to our audience, to all everybody who's listening. So you talk about the different realities and the realization that this is actually your quote, the realization that the person we love doesn't share our emotional reality can be a source of great anxiety and alienation. That is so true. I mean, recently, I also work with couples, and I've had clients who sit there in an awe of, how come this person does not do what I ask or say or look at the world the way I do? Like, there's this surprise even about, of course, everybody, especially my mate, the one I chose because we were similar, of course they have to agree with me and look at the world from my world. So tell us about that.
Well, I wrote the book because I've had all the same experiences. My observations, all couples fight. Some couples fight a little and some fight a lot. And frankly, my wife and I are in the fought a lot category. And so
you lasted 50 years, though.
Yeah, we're doing 53 years. Wow. This year. So I guess we're going to make it. But it's taken a lot of hard work. And in that process, I've learned new skills and rethought things and found things that help. And this book is kind of me sharing, hey, this worked for me, helped me, and so forth. And I found the kinds of conflicts that were the hardest were the ones that, when you got down to it, the meaning of an event to her was different than the meaning of the event to me. You start with something silly, like you go to a movie and I enjoy the movie and she's bored to tears. She doesn't find car chases particularly interesting. And we come out of the movie, and if I say, well, that was a great film, we could get in a disagreement, and with a little skill, we could maybe turn it into a fight. I don't know. But the point is, it's an absolute fact that I enjoyed it. It's an absolute fact that she was bored to tears. So as long as we stay in the realm of, this is the experience I had, we're okay. The minute we get into a judgment about what the movie was really like and so forth, we're in trouble. And so this idea of emotional reality began to make sense to me, that she brings all her background and experience and training and religion and everything else and so forth, And in that context, she interprets an event a certain way. I can look at the same exact event and I interpret it differently. It means something different to me because in my family it was different, or in my philosophical musings it's different, or whatever it is that makes up my unique reality. It is different, and that's sometimes the hardest kind of conflict to deal with, because we get into, well, you really ought to have my reality. Mm-hmm. You're a bad person if you don't have my reality.
Exactly.
How could you, who I've loved and lived with for all these years, not have the same reality? And off we go. And so the book.
I like what you said, that it does create a lot of the anxiety and alienation, because it brings this concept of, well, if we're not the same, then does that mean I have to live with another human being with their own reality for the rest of my life, and that I have to negotiate all day about everything? That appears to be, one, exhausting. Two, it appears that, well, at least half of the time, I have to let go of my reality and I have no idea what to do in another person's reality and extending myself. So definitely anxiety goes higher. I love the sentence that you wrote in your chapter 2, Making Sense. It says, the minute we're born, perhaps even sooner, we begin trying to make sense of things. Most of the time, it seems like what we need to learn is out there, external to our skin. What makes sense seems predefined. It is our job to discover it. We don't realize that what is in here, inside ourselves, plays a major role in the way we make sense of things.
Yeah, that's, you know, if you listen to what the culture says, it says something like, you make me feel like dancing. So this thing out here is what causes me to feel the way I do. But the reality is that the event happens and I interpret the event, what it means to me, can be something entirely different. So I can feel terribly hurt by something my wife says, and it's true I'm hurt, but it's not necessarily true that she hurt me or that she intended to hurt me or any of the rest of the things that we get into with that. If the person's going to have trouble accepting that the husband or wife has a different emotional reality, they're going to have some problems, because our emotional reality is different from everybody. Nobody else has exactly the same emotional reality. It's more threatening to us when someone we love has a very different reality. That shakes us up a lot more. But the truth is, no one else has your emotional reality.
And many times it seems like there's a conflict between this concept of, well, your world does not make sense to me. Like, I get it. I hear it. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I can't really bring myself to kind of be on your side or take your side or even be empathic toward it. I've had clients where, you know, we go through this conversation and a dialogue, and they do a beautiful even listening and saying and, you know, let's say parroting or reframing what the other person says, but all in a world of, this is your reality, but I can't empathize with it. I can't really see it. I can't, I'll listen to it as if I'm watching a sci-fi movie, and I'll get entertained by it. But if I have to negotiate and live with it inside something that you say that it just doesn't make sense to me, then, the resentment kind of stays. And in your third chapter, you also talk about, how do we create our own reality in that sense? Because we create our own, and then it's so hard for us to even explore or be with any other person so that we could live and cohabitate with them, or side by side within the two realities together.
Well, I do think people are going to have to learn how to reframe their own experience and their own reality and so on. And what I mean by reframe is find a broader understanding of the event that accommodates both their reality and the other person's reality. One of my favorite stories about reframing is Tom Sawyer and his fence. Tom's parents insisted that he had to whitewash the fence on a holiday. And no way did he really want to whitewash the fence on a holiday. But when his friends came by and teased him about it, he convinced them that it was a great privilege for a boy to have a chance to whitewash the fence. And pretty soon they were paying him to so that they could be allowed to whitewash the fence. He'd reframed it from an onerous task to an honorary thing, an event of some sort. We aren't all as talented as Tom Sawyer at reframing, but the idea is to expand it into a frame that allows. I remember an example. I had a guy in a class, and he loved to go hunting with his friends. And whenever he came back, his wife would hit him with all kinds of questions about what they did and who they did it with and on and on. And he would quickly get into a resentment thing about, she's checking up on me, she's suspicious of me, it isn't fair, it was pure innocent fun, so forth and so on. What he didn't get was that what she's saying is, I'm feeling insecure. Mm-hmm. I'm not, I want to be reassured that you love me. And of course, his getting resentful and accusing her of getting jealous and blaming her for acting the way she did anything but reassure her that he cared for her and so on. So if he reframed the questions as she's really feeling insecure, it produces an entirely different effect than if he interprets it she's being jealous and trying to control me.
Yes. And then you also talked about the way that we, each one of us, has our own perception about things that happen. And due to that, we create our own reality. Can you talk a bit more about that? How do we create our own reality?
Well, I think we start creating it instantly at birth, or as I said actually earlier. All the new neurophysiology that's coming out now and so on says that the way we create things is not that we really discover what's out there, is that we develop hypotheses, millions of hypotheses based on millions of experiences, and we test those, and if they get confirmed, they get firmed, kind of firmed up, if you will, and so on. So if all your life this action over here is you've interpreted as being someone's hurting me, so forth. That's the hypothesis you're gonna throw up. But it's a much more of an interaction between what's out there and the hypotheses that we bring to it. So what we're having to do really is to relearn the possibilities of what something means. And the only way to do it I know of is to share it. Sounds like you've had experience where even when people shared it at some depth, they haven't always been able to achieve an empathy. But that's the only process I know.
Yes. You're absolutely right. That's the only process that can be. The concept of, and you in your book, you also talk about the guidelines for learning from the differences. And then you explore the most important one, at least listening for the other person as not someone who is you. Because a lot of times I've also noticed that we are attempting to listen, but we're only listening for our similarities, or we're listening sometimes from a space of, no, no, that's not it. No, 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 no. Because you can see it like in their facial expressions that they're already trying to answer back. And many times I'm like, listen, your face shows you're not listening. You're just answering back in your head and you're nodding as if you're listening. So part of that is the active listening and then knowing that, yes, this person has another reality. And you also talk about listening from, combination of your head and your heart together, trying to get them, like get really the person who's in front of you.
Yeah, as you know, with when you're first learning the skill of active listening, people listen primarily just to get their own answer ready.
Yeah.
And as soon as they got
their buying answer, time.
Yeah, as soon as they got their answer, they just as soon you stop talking. Yeah. That's starting from the assumption that my reality is right, yours is wrong. if you start from the assumption that your partner has a reality that you need to understand and explore, it does change the dynamic there. You know, you're not listening to find out what's wrong with her. You're listening to understand what the experience is and what could have brought it about. And so now I admit, in my experience, or my wife and I, there are times when I can't listen like that. I'm so full of feelings myself that I just, you know, no space available inside for what she's trying to tell me. We got help, a therapist told us, do a 5-minute rule. And the way the 5-minute rule works is either one of us can say 5-minute rule, and you stop whatever you're doing. All you can talk about is who goes first. And if you can't agree on that, flip a coin. And then that person gets 5 minutes to say whatever they want to say, however they want to say it, and so on. In return, the listener gets 5 minutes to say what he or she wants to say. And if they still have something more to say, they do another round. And why it works is if you're the sender, the person who's got the feelings, 5 minutes is long. 5 minutes without anybody telling you you're bad, stupid, or crazy for feeling the way you do is long enough that some of the heat goes out of it. You know, you may still feel that way, but you don't have that sense of urgency. I've got to convince him that I'm right and so forth. In fact, I find by about 4 minutes I'm boring myself. And it, you know, my wife is a little more ill. Sometimes we have to do a second round of 5 minutes and so on. And it doesn't always end dramatically. It may end with just, well, I don't have any more to say. And that's not a bad place to stop. Problem solving can come another time, so forth and so on.
Jim, one of the things that showed up for me as you were talking, though, some people, which I've had in my office also, they can be nasty when they get their 5 minutes. They just bulldoze over the other person. And sometimes the capacity of the emotional strength is not similar between the two people. And one can definitely like bulldoze the other one and the other one just goes in. How do you suggest for couples who use those 5 minutes in really dominate the other person? How would that land for the person who's being like blasted and doesn't have the capacity or the strength to respond back at the same power?
Yeah, that's real. I have seen that happen. And I'd love to put some rules on the 5 minutes as to how you communicate your feelings. Except the minute I do that, who's going to stop them and say, you know, you can't do that, because the minute you do that, you've kind of lost the whole point of the 5-minute rule.
Right.
If, however, you can remember to communicate feelings instead of judgments, so I feel hurt instead of you're an inconsiderate so-and-so, so that you're concentrating on reporting your experience, not reporting your judgments, this will help a lot. And the person who gets what they want by bulldozing needs to understand that if what they really want is emotional connection, you don't get that by scaring your partner so much that they go hiding on you. John Gottman, who's studied a great deal in couples, talks about pursuers and distancers. And pursuers are people who, when they feel upset or anxious, they get at it by kind of almost claws flying. You know, they it must be talked about right this minute, and you know, and the distancer is somebody who would like to pull back and think about it and get away from it for a while and so forth and so on. And what happens is the pursuer is aggressive and moves forward, causing the distancer to pull back, making the pursuer more anxious. Mm-hmm. So the pursuer, you know, pursues my, I remember one time seeing, you can do the physical space. Some cultures, 8 or 10 inches is okay to talk to something. Our kind of mainstream culture, it's about 18 inches. you get closer than 18 inches and the other person starts to show signs of discomfort and so on. And I've actually watched somebody back, somebody in under a staircase just by trying to make it happen, push it. And it's the same concept with the pursuer. The pursuer pushes it, and instead of getting the emotional connection, connection gets cut off. Both people are doing what they need to do to handle their own anxiety. My wife is a pursuer, and I was a distancer. I was raised in a family where conflict was just not done. It was all underground and hidden, and certainly never in front of the kids. All I'd know as a kid was the adults had gone itchy. And what would happen, my wife would come at me, I'd start pulling back and trying to withdraw, she'd come forward more and so on. And we came up with a ground rule where I didn't have to deal with her issue whenever she felt it was done, but I had to do it within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And so she had the assurance that she would get heard, and I didn't feel controlled where she dictated when we were going to talk about things and so forth and so on. Now, what usually happened is about the time we reached agreement on that, I'd say, oh, heck, well, let's talk about it. So once the control issue was gone, get it over with. So
forth and so on. And one of the concepts of your books talks about examining your self-talk, and exactly what you were talking about, that if there is a part of you that is feeling dominated or being controlled and is resisting that, the moment you kind of examined it or looked at it and saw how you could take care of yourself in that way, then the issue lifted off, it seems like.
Yeah, it's like that issue's out of the way. And I also talk in the book about different parts of the personality, and sometimes it's almost like that. One personality who's terribly scared of being controlled fights and fights until he doesn't feel controlled, and then another personality comes in and says, oh, let's talk about it. It's kind of interesting, so forth and so on. But the self-talk thing is all of us have kind of the inner voice that's judging and commenting on stuff we're doing, and boy, you idiot, how could you have done that kind of thing and so on. Much of that inner voice is negative.
Yes.
It's telling us how we failed and we should have done this better and so forth and so on. Much of it's stuff we learned from parents, family, school, so forth, early stuff. And we kind of put ourselves in a prison by continuing to inject ourselves with that negative thought. And the idea and the way people seem to be working on this is to actually come up with positive phrases that reinforce where you want to be and the kind of person you want to be, and then repeat it to yourself in various ways. The most extreme one I ran into was a guy who put a rubber band around his wrist, and certain negative phrases, self-talk phrases, he'd snap himself with the rubber band, and that would remind him to start reprogramming and so on. But there's a cartoon I've seen where there's a guy sitting in a cage with all of these slats and so on, and the slats are all labeled beliefs. Mm-hmm. And he's limited by his beliefs, and he can get out of it only by reprogramming some of those beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Examining yourself, it seems like it takes on the concept of, again, what you have in your book, responsibility, the ability to respond with what's going on in front of you. And then based on that, maybe your different parts can first communicate with each other and take care of yourself responsibly. And then to bring that, the same concept of responsibility in the way that we communicate with each other, to be able to say the message that is important for us, which we talked about the meaning, the feeling, what our needs are, how to fulfill our needs, what we need for negotiation. And that is a part of the tools that you're also offering in this book. Can you say a bit more about that?
Well, some psychologists even go so far as to talk about them as subpersonalities, even having, even being different genders and so forth and so on, but still inside. But certainly everybody's had the experience of, well, I'd really love to do this, but, and then there's another voice that says so on. I mean, like, I'd love to lose weight, but... So far, the second voice seems to be winning so far. But the idea is to get the two people to talk and even act this out. You can use the empty chair thing where you talk to the other personality. And the underlying concept, though, is that each part of the personality is trying to take care of you. It's trying to do something positive for you, but often does it in a way that's limiting, confining, keeping you from being all you could be. And what we want to do is get the voices, inner voices, talking to each other so that they free you up to your full potential and capability.
There's also this concept of how do we... due to our need or due to habit, due to maybe the anxiety that shows up or due to the need to be right or dominant, we create a communication path where we could escalate a fight or we could actually calm down a fight. The way we are, we could create where we could get at each other. And with the simple concept that could have been communicated, it could get raised. Or we can notice something is getting escalated and try to avoid that type of an escalation and calm it down. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, yeah, I had the experience of my first wife died quite suddenly. And when I remarried, about 6 months after I remarried, I realized we were having the same fight that I'd had with my first wife. Now, I could understand how I knew the script, how she knew the script. Obviously, I was doing something with cueing her to act in the same way that my first wife did. And she was cueing me at the same time and so on. So I got interested in what happens. And they do escalate and they kind of start off with judgments and accusation and blame. And then they move, usually the issue gets expanded. So you start out with somebody left the cap off the toothpaste, something silly like that. And then it's, you're always so messy and you're irresponsible. You don't take care of things. And pretty soon, I mean, even our neighbors talk about that and so forth. And you've expanded the issue. You brought in other people as ammunition, and it gets higher and higher. And there's in the book, I list the each step in there, because if you can see yourself doing it, you have a chance of stopping it. Now, the way my wife and I have stopped it, we've set some rules. One is we don't expand the issue. Expanding the issue is going from toothpaste cap to you're always so messy.
Yes.
And then the next level of expansion might be, this is the way you are in life. You didn't get the taxes done. You didn't do, so forth. So, okay. Our rule is don't expand the issue. And being human, every now and then, one of us will. And the rule simply serves as a way of kind of getting us back on track. Okay, I'll talk about toothpaste caps and so forth. Another one is, don't use other people as ammunition. So that when the minute he started talking about how the neighbors said the same thing, or Dr. So-and-so says such and such, or your sister said, so on, and claiming other people. All that happens when somebody feels ammunition being used against them or other people are being used against them, they start lining up their people.
Of course.
And pretty soon you have armies that are fighting each other. And I've seen families get split right down the middle by this sort of thing.
Especially if you have children, James. I mean, definitely people are going to create alliances with their children, some form. And I think the children will fall into that trap and begin imagining and seeing one of their parents exactly as the way that the other one does.
And that's really the worst, because you're forcing the child into taking sides and choosing between one parent over the other and so forth. That's the most disastrous. So, you know, the minute you hear somebody saying, "Do you know what your father did?" and so forth, cut, stop. You're using other people as ammunition, and it's simply going to result in counterattack.
Yes. Now, so responsibly communicating, as you say it, what I'm hearing from you is to first realize and examine your own self, look at what's going on inside of you, look at your different personalities or subpersonalities, different parts of you who have different needs and are acting in a different perspective. Be aware of how you are engaging in that argument. Are you going toward fighting and escalating something just to prove some point, or are you going really after solving an issue and creating peace afterward? And, you know, talk what you need to say it responsibly with your impressions and what's coming from you versus judging the other person and attacking them, or, you know, generalizing and expanding all of it, and move really toward solving the issue that is at hand, one issue at a time as it arises, in a way that it works for both of you and both the realities. So can you talk a little bit about the collaborative problem solving?
Okay. Well, the first thing I'd mention, because that's a great, great summary of the book, but I think it was Joseph Campbell that said, in any relationship, there's you, there's me, and there's we.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of resolving conflicts collaboratively is that you make sure that no matter what's happening at the level of which car do we buy or whatever the argument's about and so on, that we always protect the we. So that when the discussion is over and so on, there's still a we to come back to. And sometimes we approach problem solving as you're the problem. If I could just get you to change your mind or do this or do that and so on, I wouldn't have a problem. And if both people are in that position, then it's very hard to move anywhere. I do outline in the book a series of steps that where you define the problem and then you generate alternatives and so forth and so on. There's quite a bit of logic underneath that. But the big thing is there's a process you both subscribe to. You know what the steps are, and you know where you are in the process. And so you have that reassurance of we're moving through it. We're not stuck. We're not enemies. We have a problem instead of you're my problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely, you are not my problem. You're the one who I chose to love and to mate and to be with in life. So there's having the ability to have that the problem to be put outside of us. Everyone, we're talking to Dr. James Craigton, the author of Loving Through Your Differences, Building Strong Relationships from Separate Realities. And you can find Dr. Craigton at his website, James L. Craigton, CREIGHTON.com. And where else they can find your book? I think Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble, IndieBound.
IndieBound and all of that.
All of those. So, and hopefully in your local bookstore.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully you'll have a local bookstore.
Well, not for long, but I think there's still some Barnes & Noble somewhere, yes. So if you wanted to share any last comments within the 1 minute that we have left, what is it that we haven't talked about and you really, really wanted to talk about and let people who are listening or seeing us to get from you?
Well, I do want people to know that there are skills that help and techniques that help. Learning how to solve problems is and how to resolve differences and so on. It is learned. And these are skills that I hope more and more we learn from childhood on, because there are things we can do to make it better.
One of the things that you have said about your own, and thank you for sharing your own experiences, is the ability to look at our own life consistently and see that in relationships, what do we do that, as you said, keeps creating what I create and the result that I do create. What is it that you've learned in the 53 years of your marriage? Because most of the time when we say, do you have a happy marriage? And we'd say, well, you know, if we did it for 53 years, then it's called a happy marriage. But you also were authentic and said, we fight a lot. So very quickly tell us, what was the secret that you fight a lot and yet you are resilient and you create this beautiful, authentic and intimate relationship?
We work at it.
Yes.
And it's hard work.
Yes. Go. Yes, you're absolutely right. I think people think that it should a good relationship, which is happy, should be effortless. But I love it. You said it. We work at it. We actually make it important and we go at it and see what the greatness of it. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on my show. It was a joy to have you. And I hope everyone out there who is looking for creating a loving relationship gets this book, Loving Through Your Differences by Dr. James Creighton. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it.
And for everyone else, it's been an amazing time to be with you. So create an amazing day and week for yourself and everyone around you. And see you right back here next Monday.